Vaikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vaikatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're tackling, well, a really significant thinker, Hannah Arendt, and her major work, The Human Condition.
It's a powerful one and, you know, written decades ago, but it just feels incredibly relevant to how we feel today, almost diagnosing our modern condition.
Absolutely. So our plan is to really unpack Arendt's analysis of what she calls the vita activa, the act of life.
Mm-hmm. And her core argument, which is pretty radical, is that modern society has basically flipped the natural order of human activities upside down.
Yeah, she identifies these three key activities: labor, work, and action. We'll get into those.
And she argues this inversion, this focus on, well, the economics of production mainly, has really undermined our political nature. It leads to this deep sense of alienation.
She frames the central question so well. She's asking, you know, what defines a truly human life? What happens when we end up prioritizing just staying alive over really being free?
And she uses a fantastic analogy, thinking about the launch of Sputnik back then.
Right, the dawn of the space age.
Exactly. And the promise of automation, too. She asks, okay, if machines free us from all the necessary toil, the labor, mm-hmm. what's actually left for us humans to do?
It's such a sharp question.
Yeah.
Because it really hits at our current feeling, doesn't it? That maybe we've been sort of reduced to just being consumers, caught in a cycle.
Precisely. It's not just abstract theory. It feels like she saw something coming.
Okay, so before we dive deeper into the book, let's talk a bit about Hannah Arendt herself. Her life story is really key here.
Definitely. Born in Germany in 1906, died in 75. A major political theorist, studied under some real philosophical heavyweights like Heidegger and Jaspers.
But what really shapes her perspective, I think, is her lived experience.
Absolutely. She wasn't just theorizing from an armchair. She was Jewish. She had to flee Nazi Germany. She actually became stateless for a time.
Imagine that. Experiencing the complete collapse of the political world around you.
It gave her this incredibly sharp awareness of how fragile public life actually is, and how fundamental belonging is. You can really feel that urgency in her writing.
So the human condition isn't just standalone philosophy. It connects to her earlier work.
Yes, very much. Her book, The Origins of Totalitarianism, was this massive analysis of how political systems break down, how they destroy the space for human action.
So this book, The Human Condition, is almost like the positive vision.
Exactly. It's her constructive response. After analyzing the destruction, she asks, what is it that we need to recover? What constitutes a dignified human existence? Her theories were absolutely forged in that fire of historical crisis.
Right, so let's get into the book itself. What's the central premise she's working with?
Well, she starts by challenging a long tradition in Western philosophy, actually. The tradition that always valued contemplation, thinking, the vita contemplativa, over action, doing, the vita actio.
That flips that.
She insists we need to understand human existence through what we do. And specifically through these three fundamental activities we mentioned, labor, work, and action.
Okay, and the crisis she sees in modernity is what exactly?
It's that we've basically collapsed everything down into just one of those activities.
Yeah.
Labor, the stuff we do just to survive, day-to-day biological necessity, economics.
And by doing that, we lose something important.
We lose two crucial things. We lose a proper appreciation for work, the activity that builds the lasting, durable human world around us. The buildings, art, tools.
I look at the tangible world.
Right. And even more critically, we lose the space for action. For Arendt, action is the highest activity. It's where politics and freedom truly happen. It's almost disappeared, she argues.
So the book school isn't just academic categorization. It's really a call to recover something vital.
It's a call to recover the political dimension of our lives, which she believed is absolutely essential for human dignity and freedom. Can we find that space again? That's the question hanging over the whole book.
To understand how we lost it, she looks back, right? To the Greeks?
Yes. She uses the ancient Greek polis, the city-state, as a kind of model, or maybe a diagnostic tool. She focuses on the sharp distinction they made between two spheres of life.
The public versus the private.
Exactly. First, you have the private realm. She calls it the oikos, the household.
This is where life happens, basically. Biology, survival.
Mm-hmm. Managing the necessities of life. It's inherently unequal, ruled by needs by the master of the household, ensuring survival. You were considered free in the oikos.
Okay, so that's the private. What about the public?
Once those necessities were taken care of, often, historically, through the labor of others, like slaves or women, The free male citizen could step out of the household and into the public realm, the polis.
And the polis was totally different.
Completely different. It was a space of freedom, of equality among peers. It's where you distinguished yourself not through necessity, but through great speech and memorable deeds, where you revealed your unique identity, your who, to others.
That sounds quite idealistic compared to our world. Where did that clear line go?
Well, that's Arndt's crucial and maybe most original argument. She says that in the modern era, that line blurred and was eventually overrun by something new, which she calls the social.
The social? That sounds positive, like community or society.
You'd think so, but Arndt uses the term very critically. For her, the social is basically the concerns of the private household economics, managing resources, biological needs exploding outwards, and taking over the public space.
So it's like the logic of the household budget became the logic of the entire nation.
Precisely. Politics gets reduced to what she calls national housekeeping or administration. Mm-hmm. It becomes about managing populations, economic growth, distributing resources efficiently.
And the result?
The result is that citizens become, well, taxpayers, consumers,
yeah.
Managed units within a large system. Conformity is valued over distinction. And that destroys the actual space needed for political action, for real debate, and the appearance of the unique individual.
Okay, that's a powerful critique. So to really grasp the impact, we need to properly understand her three categories. Let's start with labor.
Right, the activity of the animal laborans, the laboring animal. It's easy to confuse with work, but Arndt is very specific.
So what defines labor for her?
It's tied directly to the biological life process. It's cyclical, it's repetitive, it never really ends. Think about activities like cleaning, cooking, even childbirth, and basic subsistence farming.
And the key is what happens to the product.
Exactly. The product of labor is immediately consumed. It meets a life need, and then it vanishes. You eat the bread, it's gone. You clean the room, it gets dirty again. It doesn't build anything lasting in the world.
And her critique of modernity is that we've elevated this.
Yes. That our society has come to value endless production and consumption, this cycle of necessity above all else. We aim for abundance, but it traps us in the rhythm of labor. Even when technology might offer escape, we're stuck on this hamster wheel.
Okay, so that's labor. How does work differ? This is the activity of Homo Faber.
Homo Faber, man the maker or fabricator. Work is entirely different because it does create durable things. It builds the artificial human world.
So tools, buildings, art, books, the stuff that lasts.
Precisely. Work produces the stable, shared environment, the stage, you might say, upon which human life unfolds and history happens. It gives permanence. It outlasts individual lives. It has a clear beginning and a definite end. You make the table is finished.
It sounds much more substantial than labor.
It is. But Arndt adds a warning here, too. The mindset of Homo Faber is utilitarian. It's about means and ends, efficiency, getting the job done.
And that's fine for making objects.
But it becomes dangerous if that instrumental logic takes over everything, especially politics. If you start seeing the world, and worse, other people, as just raw material to be shaped or engineered towards some predetermined end.
Then you crush freedom. You destroy the space for the unexpected, for genuine action.
Exactly. Which brings us to the highest activity in her hierarchy, action.
This is the political activity, pure and simple.
Yes. Action isn't about survival needs like labor, and it's not about making objects like work. Action happens between people. It requires what she calls plurality.
Plurality meaning?
Meaning the simple fact that we live on Earth not as solitary individuals, but as many unique, distinct beings who share the world. Action needs this diversity, this web of relationships.
And how does action happen?
Through speech and deeds. When we act and speak in the public realm, we insert ourselves into the human world. We reveal who we are, not just what skills we have or what needs we fulfill.
And this connects to another really interesting concept of hers, natality.
Yes, natality. It's a beautiful concept. It refers to the fact that each human birth represents a new beginning.
A fresh start.
A completely fresh start.
Right.
Every newcomer carries the potential to initiate something totally unexpected, something unprecedented, mm-hmm. to interrupt predictable processes. This capacity to begin anew is, for Arndt, the very source of human freedom.
Like a political miracle is always possible.
Kind of, yeah. Action is how we manifest that potential for new beginnings. Mm-hmm. It's how we reveal our unique who, that irreducible identity that makes us distinct individuals, distinguishing it from the more generic what of our qualities or roles.
That distinction between the who and the what, that really sticks with me. It suggests our deepest dignity lies in that political self-revelation, not just our economic function.
Absolutely. Okay, let's maybe pull back a bit and look at some overarching themes that emerge from all this.
Good idea. The first one you mentioned earlier was world alienation. What does she mean by that exactly?
It's a specific kind of alienation. Not alienation from your inner self, like Marx might talk about, but alienation from the shared, stable, human-made world around us.
And this is caused by?
It's caused by the triumph of the laboring mentality. When we start treating the durable objects created by work furniture, buildings, tools, as if they were disposable items meant only for consumption, like the products of labor.
It makes you think, doesn't it? Why do we find it so much easier and often cheaper just to replace something broken rather than taking the time to fix it?
That's a perfect everyday example of world alienation. We're losing touch with the permanence, the thingness of the world that work creates.
Okay, a second key theme has to be the primacy of plurality.
Definitely. If genuine political action can only happen between unique individuals, then plurality, difference, disagreement, debate isn't just a feature of politics, it's the essential condition for it.
So if we only ever talk to people who already agree with us, or if we're constantly seeking consensus and avoiding friction,
then according to Arendt, we're not really engaging in politics or action.
Yeah.
We're just doing administration, managing opinions. True politics needs that spark of difference, that interaction among equals who are distinct.
Which connects to her big warning, the third theme, the danger of meaninglessness.
Yes. This goes back to that Sputnik thought experiment. If automation does free us from the burden of labor, but we've forgotten the value of durable work and, crucially, the practice of political action, what are we left with?
A society just focused on
passive consumption, entertainment, leisure activities that just fill time. A society, she feared, that would be comfortable, maybe even abundant, but ultimately empty of real political meaning and human distinction. It's a pretty chilling forecast of our screen-obsessed age, perhaps.
It really is. Her writing is just full of these powerful ideas and memorable phrases.
She had a real gift for that, didn't she? Crystallizing complex thoughts.
Let's share a couple of those key quotes or ideas that really encapsulate her thinking.
Okay. How about this one on power? Power corresponds to the human ability not just to act, but to act in concert.
I love that definition. It completely reframes power. It's not about one person dominating others.
No, not at all. It's a collective capacity. It only emerges when people come together, speak, and act together as equals. It's relational. It exists between people. You don't own it individually.
That's a fundamentally democratic idea of power.
It is. And here's another one. Dealing with the inherent uncertainty of politics, of action. The remedy against the unpredictability of the future is contained in the faculty to make and keep promises.
Ah, so promises and agreements are how we create stability.
They're how humans create little islands of predictability and trust in the otherwise chaotic flow of human affairs. Action is unpredictable. But promises allow us to bind ourselves to a future course, to build relationships.
And maybe one more, bringing back that core idea about identity.
Right. The fundamental importance of action is that through it, we reveal our unique personal identities, our who. This is completely distinct from simply showing what we are, our skills, our job title, our needs.
Yeah.
Action is about appearing as a unique individual among other unique individuals.
So given all this, how do we apply it? How do we avoid just being the animal laborers and actually find opportunities for work and action in our own lives?
Well, on a personal level, you could actually try using her framework, labor, work, action, to think about how you spend your time.
Like doing a time audit.
Sort of, yeah. Are you consciously making space for work? In her sense, maybe learning a skill, creating something durable, fixing something instead of replacing it. And are you actively seeking out moments for action?
Which you'd move.
Engaging in real substantive discussions where different viewpoints are present, maybe initiating a project in your community, getting involved in local issues beyond just voting, anything that involves interacting with others as distinct equals.
And thinking more broadly, civically.
We really need to take her critique of the social seriously. We should defend public spaces, and that means physical spaces like town squares or community centers, but also metaphorical spaces like open forums for debate, independent media as vital arenas for genuine political action.
Not just spaces for efficient administration or reaching easy consensus.
Exactly. They need to be spaces where disagreement can happen, where new ideas can emerge, where people can actually appear in their uniqueness.
And what about that point on consumption and world alienation?
That might be the toughest challenge in our consumer culture. But maybe it starts with just being more conscious, thinking about durability, about repair, about the story behind objects, valuing craftsmanship, work, over sheer disposability and economic function, labor. It's a small act, but it pushes back against that alienation from the world.
For me, the idea I keep coming back to, the one that feels most hopeful, is natality.
Ah, yes, the new beginning.
That inherent capacity for starting something new just because new people are always arriving in the world. It feels like Arndt's reminder that even when things seem stuck or broken politically, the potential for change, for something unexpected, that political miracle is always there.
It absolutely is. And that's why, despite the starkness of her diagnosis of modern problems, the book isn't ultimately pessimistic. It holds out this potential for renewal. And perhaps the final, most provocative takeaway is this. Arndt forces us to see that freedom isn't really something you have as an individual possession.
It's something that happens where...
It happens between people. It emerges in the public space when they dare to act together. So recovering politics, in her sense, isn't just about better government. It's fundamentally essential for living a fully human, dignified life.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.